good to be in Iowa for the first time in a long time. And Thurm Gaskell, who is sitting here, I've been saying, as I've done a couple other programs earlier today, that my first time getting involved in the political scene in Iowa was 40 years ago in 1972, when I ran the what was then the Nixon agricultural campaign nationwide, and Thurm Gaskell was my ag chairman out here in the state of Iowa, and that brought back lots of great memories. Thurm, it's nice to be here with you. And Keith Heffernan was also involved at that time, and Keith's out here as well. Bill has covered you know, some of the key ag points already, and I won't duplicate those. And when we get to some questions, feel free to throw out any ag questions that you will, that you wish. The when the I said a minute ago, when the dust settles, there's not going to be a lot of difference in the farm bill between the Republican version in the House of Representatives and the Democratic version, if you will, that came through in the Senate. Basically, those differences were pretty much resolved at the time of the supercommittee discussions, clear back a year ago now. Those were never enacted. That compromise, if you will, was never enacted into law at that time because the supercommittee fell apart. And then it sort of started up again during the regular congressional session. And, of course, they ran out of time here before the August recess and didn't get it done. And there was a little political flip-flap going on then with the Democrats saying, you know, don't send over a disaster bill, send over a total farm bill. And the Republicans saying, well, let's get a disaster bill done and get that taken care of, and then we'll come immediately after that with the farm bill. And as a consequence, nothing got done, which is pretty typical of Washington these days. So now they still have the challenge of what are they going to do between now and September 30th. And, you know, we can comment on that some more, but it's all speculation. But eventually they'll get that done. And the reason I mention all that is because, in my view, this is an election that's going to be decided much more on the basis of non-agricultural issues than it will agricultural ones. Agricultural ones are always important, and the thrust or the emphasis or the priorities that you'll see in a Romney administration are going to be somewhat different from an Obama administration, more favorable to agriculture in my judgment. But those are not the big determinative factors of the election of 2012. It's a lot of the other major issues that affect agriculturalists and non-agriculturalists alike, that affect all of us as Americans. And these are issues that have gotten worse over time and where the can has been kicked down the road by both political parties and both presidencies for ages. And now we're running out of time, and they simply have to be confronted. We've got way too big a debt that's been increased substantially over the last 4 years. When you add $1 trillion worth of debt every year, in essence, for four consecutive years, that's a heck of a burden to be borne by future generations. And I often think that people in my generation, we senior statesmen, ought to apologize to our kids and grandkids for what we're doing to them in terms of the debt burden and the deficit burden that we're placing on their shoulders. But we're never going to lessen that burden if we don't start getting our tails in gear and begin to confront those issues. And that's in terms of total federal spending levels, where we spend it. Do we reform entitlement programs? Which ones to reform? In what pace? At what pace? And all those kinds of very major policy questions that have to be dealt with and have really been just pushed aside for a long period of time. You got a businessman in Governor Romney who understands all this. And that, in my judgment, is the basic difference between a Romney presidency over the next 4 years and an Obama presidency over the next 4 years. You have somebody who really understands what impact all this has had on the private sector and is having and will have in the future if it's not dealt with. Whereas on the other side, you have someone who has never run anything in the private sector in his entire life and really doesn't understand this at all, and has an administration that doesn't really understand it fully either, or is so burdened with commitments to constituency groups that are not in favor of reforms that it would be essentially impossible for the administration to get anything done. And by that I mean primarily the labor unions, but there are a number of other left-wing constituencies that are so important to the to a Democratic president, and I have to be won over if these kinds of reforms are going to take place over the next 4 years. And that would be a formidable task for any Democratic president, and an especially formidable task for Mr. Obama. And I think one of the things that troubled me, by the way, about the Obama administration when it first came to office, and still troubles me, is the fact that, as many of you probably will remember, not one single member of the Obama cabinet, at the initial Obama cabinet, I'm not sure whether it's changed any since then, the initial cabinet came out of the private sector. Every member of the Obama cabinet came out of government somewhere. That's just not the way to run a country. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked in so many respects, and that has to change. And just one point on agriculture, and we'll go to questions. And that relates to the point that Bill mentioned about exports. You know, with all the involvement I've had with exports through the years, I have to come up and say something about that here today. And that is, we have to be careful that we don't put too much emphasis on programs like renewable fuels. And I've been involved with pushing ethanol as a renewable fuel for 40 years. But we have to be careful that we don't come to the conclusion that we don't need exports any longer, because we can generate all the demand we need internally within the United States with food, livestock feeds, and renewable fuels. That's too high a risk, way too high a risk. And when you have a year like this one, which is so volatile, that really indicates why this is the case, and why you need safety valves all over the place. And one of the good safety valves for having too much production, when that comes along, and there's not a lot of difference between being too short and too long. When you go too long, your safety valve has to be exports. And if we back off of that and become undependable exporters, then we're in deep, deep trouble. And we simply cannot afford to permit that to happen. Okay, let's stop there and go to questions. Yeah, Ken.
Dr. Yeider, I'd like to ask you, looking back at last year's lame duck session, they seemed to get a lot done because they could compromise. Coming up this year, is there a potential that a lame duck session might actually be the only time of the year that Congress gets anything done?
It could be, Ken, but that'll depend a lot on what happens on Election Day in November, because that'll determine how many of the existing members of Congress will be around for that. Well, they'll be there for the lame duck session, but they may be packing their bags, at least some of them will. So it depends on what their level of interest is at that point in time. And then obviously it depends on what happens in the presidential race as well. But, you know, you raise a good point, because it has a farm bill aspect to it, with September 30th being the deadline. If the Congress cannot finish the farm bill between now and September 30th, and I don't think that's a lost cause. Most people would say it is. But you got 39 farm organizations who have come out with a letter just recently saying to the members of Congress, get it done, for heaven's sakes. We want you to do it before now and September 30th. And the fact is, the matter, they could do it. But they got a lot of other stuff on their agenda between now and September 30th as well, and there are only a few legislative days left before they all go home to campaign in October. So the odds are that they won't get it done before September 30th, and they'll pass some kind of an extension. Then the question is, do they extend only through the lame duck session, which would certainly provide some motivation to get it done in the lame duck session, because, again, farmers are going to be pretty nervous in the service about not having that farm legislation in place going into their planting season next year. You leave farmers with a lot of uncertainty as to what their safety net of any will look like in 2013. So that will help in a lame duck session. The safer thing for Congress might be to kick the can down the road a little further and extend the present legislation for, say, 6 months or a year. And that could, if they do it for 6 months, maybe they could still get it done by spring planting time. But if they extend for a year, then there's a likelihood it could spill past planting season, which means you leave everybody in Iowa and everywhere else in a position of uncertainty. I don't know what the Congress will ultimately do. Your guess in that regard is as good as mine. Okay? And all of that, by the way, Ken, as you heard me say earlier, is a fuss over not very much difference between the two. You know, my general reaction is, for heaven's sakes, folks, why can't you mesh those differences? Because they're not all that great. And it all comes down to leadership. And that gets important in the presidential race, and that's why I like the leadership potential of Governor Romney. But it comes down to leadership in the Congress as well, in both political parties, to get these kinds of things done and get them done in a timely fashion.
Secretary, neither of these analogies have anything to do with Governor Romney. But the last time we had a Republican president, he vetoed the farm bill not once but twice. Now we need a farm bill to come through the House, and the two major leaders won't consent to bring it to the floor. What's your plea to the community to support a Republican candidate? How's his view going to be on this policy?
Well, the answer to that is it'll get to the floor of the House. It's just a question of when. There are a few skirmishes that are going on, not only within the Republican Party, but between the leaders of the within the Republican members of the House of Representatives, but between them and their Democratic counterparts as well. So don't just blame the Republican leadership. It takes leadership in both sides. It takes two to tango. And there's a little political gamesmanship coming from the White House on that subject as well, that's coming down through the Democratic leaders of the Senate and the House. So it's a combination of all of that. So I think you'll have no difficulty getting a signature by Governor Romney on the next farm bill. I don't think you'll have any difficulty getting the signature of President Obama, should he be there, on the next farm bill. The remaining little battles there are at the House and the Senate, and some of them seem to us, some of us, to be a little bit petty on both sides of the political aisle. Okay, a little bit more on exports. And by the way, one of the reasons that I've raised this is because we have a tendency to relax a bit on exports because our numbers have been so good over the last year or so. $140 billion in exports in 2011, and we pat ourselves on the back for that, as we should. But actually, our volume numbers do not look nearly that impressive. And, in fact, we have lost market share in a number of areas in the export marketplace. And I was also disturbed because it was such a battle for the Obama administration to move the Colombia, Panama, and Korea free trade agreements through the Congress. I mean, those agreements had been negotiated back in the George W. Bush administration, and they sat on the White House desk for 2.5 years before they went anywhere, due almost entirely to the objection of the labor unions, who just didn't want them presented to the Congress. And finally, there was so much pressure from American agriculture and a lot of other places to get those things approved by the Congress that the White House began to push back against the labor unions and basically said, hey, guys, back off. You cause enough trouble in this area. Let us get these things done, because they've become a political negative for us on the Democratic side. So the labor unions pulled back a little bit, and the White House was able to put together, with the help of a lot of Republican votes, put together enough votes to get those passed. So we got them done. But the fact is, American agriculture lost a lot of sales, particularly in Colombia, as a result of that delay. Just another indication of how important exports are and what a mistake it is to spin our wheels on issues like that. So we got to keep our nose to the grindstone in this area, and we need to make sure that we in the United States get our due market share around the world. We want to continue to develop the China market without question, and we want to develop India as it begins to emerge as a significant marketplace. It's not there yet, but it'll come along. And if we can get Japan in the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations, we've got a lot of additional opportunities in Japan that we need to work on in the next 2 or 3 years. Not for now. Yeah.
Yeah, this question has been asked numerous times, but you have such a long lineage in national agricultural
sure.
programs I'd like to take. They've talked about dividing the food stamp issue from the farm bill. And I understand there's a reason why they're hooked together. But is it time to separate the two?
That is a really good question. if any of you didn't hear it, it's should we separate food stamps or the food programs generally, which is often the proposal, food stamps, school lunches, and school breakfast programs, and the WIC program, Women, Infants, and Children. Should all of those programs go over to the Department of Health and Human Services rather than being in USDA, or should they remain in USDA? And as you know, it's a controversy right now on the Farm Bill, and it's one of the things where the Democrats and the Republicans are fighting about, because the Republicans in the House are proposing to reduce food stamp the budget for food stamps more than was done by the Democrats on the Senate side. So that brings up this debate once more. And I can tell you, in terms of good governance, what would you do if you started from scratch? The answer is you'd put them over in HHS. You would not put them in the Department of Agriculture. You would move them because there's more of a fit in reality with the health-related kinds of programs in the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, why hasn't that ever happened until now, and why will it probably not happen now? Politically, it's so difficult to do. People in agriculture are very skittish about that because they, once you get nutrition votes lined up for the farm bill, you pass a farm bill. And their feeling is if you don't have those nutrition votes, the total farm bill may go down the tubes. So you have a lot of agricultural support for keeping them there. Even though they're uncomfortable having them there, they're saying, well, you know, reality is we better swallow hard and keep them in the USDA tank because then they'll vote for farm legislation. And that's the view that has prevailed until now. The other maybe bigger reason why it is unlikely to happen is because the USDA reports to different congressional committees than does HHS. And so as a consequence, you know, there's a lot of pizzazz involved with these food programs. So the Senate and House Agriculture Committees like having food stamps there because that's a lot of clout, a lot of money involved in all those food programs. And that goes away if they go over to HHS, which reports to the so-called Commerce Committees in the Senate and the House. The Commerce Committees, of course, would love to have them, and their attitude is, bring them on. We'll take them tomorrow morning. And so you get a big fight on Capitol Hill, and so far nobody's been able to resolve that battle on Capitol Hill, and as a consequence, they stay right where they are. Okay? One quickie.
You mentioned the RFS. There's been too much
put too much emphasis on it, but of course we know that there's calls for a waiver right now with the from the livestock, especially from the governors of livestock poultry states. Do you think we should have a waiver?
Well, we're all sympathetic to what this has done to our folks in the livestock and poultry industries, beef, pork, and poultry. And that has a significant effect here in Iowa, of course, which is a major livestock state. This is not an easy time for those folks because prices have increased so dramatically. On the other hand, markets work. And the fact is, the rationalization has already begun, and you know, we're seeing adjustments taking place in ethanol. We're seeing adjustments in the livestock and poultry industries. We're going to see adjustments in the price levels of grains as we move forward. There's going to be a rationing process and a rationalization process that's already underway and will continue. I can't make that decision because it's an EPA decision, and that's the a different administration. But if I were advising President Romney, and I'm not on this particular issue, my advice would be do not grant the waiver. I believe that the market will, in a relatively short period of time, handle that adjustment. And basically parcel it out among everybody that's affected. Anytime you get government further involved to try to deal with issues like this, government usually mucks it up. And so I'd rather let the private sector do it through the market process than to get a few more bureaucrats into action, most of whom will have no agricultural experience whatsoever, if any, and the chances that they might muck it up are pretty darn great. Okay, got to go.